the Ghost Goal Podcast.
Liverpool came crashing back down to earth after their 7-0 win against Manchester United, when they went to relegation strugglers Bournemouth and lost 1-0 on Saturday. Meanwhile, Chelsea kept up their good form with a 3-1 win at Leicester. Arsenal continued their march to the title with a 3-0 win at Fulham. And Manchester United failed to get back on pace with a 0-0 draw at home against relegation strugglers Southampton. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to episode 401 of the Ghost Goal Podcast. While we do this remote every week, pretty much, I am even more remote this time. I am back in England visiting family, so if you hear any noise in the background, I'll do my best to edit it out in post-production, but there may be still some left in. You know, we got family coming in and out, so give us the benefit of the doubt on that one. But Javier, how are you doing?
Doing great, you know. Other than I tweaked my back a little bit a couple days ago, and then I had I still had to go to work. So it was I'm an old man, Alex, 30 years old. I've been tweaking my back since I was like 12, like 13. I've had like lower back where I randomly will just like sometimes it doesn't happen for a couple of years, but sometimes it'll happen like, you know, relatively often. But back problems.
You're playing
suck.
Through the pain.
Back problems. Suck.
Playing through
exactly.
the pain.
Playing through the pain. Here we are.
Just make sure you don't you know, pull an N'Golo Kante and play too much through the pain, and then all of a sudden you have to get surgery that you know, keeps you out of commission for longer than it would have originally been necessary.
It's not something like that. It's like, you know, it'll come in like three. It'll be healed within like 3 to 5 days if I take care of it. But I don't play football for a living, thankfully, because that would suck to have back problems if you played football for a living.
So hope you feel better. But obviously that Arsenal result over the weekend helped you feel a lot better. I'm not sure how worried you are. You didn't seem that worried last week when we talked about it.
Well, Alex,
but do you want to hit on that real quick since we've got plenty of other games to talk about?
This season, this is now... we've won every single London Derby that we've played away from home. We've conceded 0 goals in the London Derbies. First time ever that a team's gone 5-0 away from home in London Derbies in a season and not conceded any goals, beating Tottenham, Chelsea, Brentford, which I want to say we beat them 3-0, them at Fulham 3-0, and Brighton. Well, Brighton isn't a London Derby, but we beat them 4-2. So we beat the three, like teams that this season have been, you know, punching above their weight.
Crystal Palace is the other London Derby.
That's the other London Derby, yeah. But I was saying we've beaten the teams that have been punching above their weight in London, typically a hard place to go, all of these places away from home. Clean sheets in all of them, winning all of those games. So when I see this Arsenal season as a vacuum in the grand scope of things, this is nothing like any season that Arsenal's ever had. This is incredible.
That's usually what people point to when they talk about historically, at least in the recent past. People say it's usually tougher for a London club to win the Premier League because there's so many more derbies involved as a London club. You know, Manchester City and Manchester United only have to play each other twice. Liverpool only have to play Everton twice. But all these London clubs have to play each other twice, and there's what, like 5 of them? So
this Fulham,
they're always intense affairs.
This Fulham game was unbelievable, though. I mean, from the off, I know they didn't have João Palhinha, but they still had the rest of their team, and this was a confident Fulham side who, you know, have been a menace at home this season, and they were at the beginning of the game, you know, passing the ball around, playing their game, but we just blew them over. I mean, that first half... up 3-0 in the first half. That was probably some of the best football I've seen Arsenal play in a decade. I mean, incredible half of football. It just
is. Leandro Trossard going to keep Gabriel Jesus out of the team now?
Absolutely. For now, he has to.
You think so?
That performance was incredible. Yeah, I mean, he's the first player to get 3 assists for us in a half since I think Dennis Bergkamp. So, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do to get 3 assists in one half. I know it's like kind of like a nitpicky stat, but there aren't.
You do remember Willian getting 3 assists in his first game for Arsenal at Fulham, right?
It wasn't all in one half.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that it was in one half. I'm just saying...
Also, that was a very shit Fulham team that got relegated
season.
True. I can't praise the team enough. I mean, it's the football we're playing right now. It doesn't feel like we're gonna choke this season, because even when we've played our like bad spells this season, we didn't play bad, particularly bad in those games. You know, there were some decisions that didn't go our way, like the Brentford one, in the Everton game. You know, there was some shithousery done. I think honestly, the Everton game was the game where even more so than the City game, I think we deserved to lose the Everton game. Everton played really, really well on the day, and we played, that was probably the worst we've played all season. But other than those games, I mean, there's just been a very, very consistent performance that's been improving steadily. And suddenly, like I said, you know, on the last pod, we have Gabriel Jesus back. What huge boost for the team. You could tell everyone was buzzing for the game to start when he was on the bench. And when he came on the pitch, he almost, I mean, trademark Jesus, gets the ball, you know, does like a like an incredible little flick off his back heel, and then makes a run in, gets played in, and all, you know, typical Jesus, puts it right at the keeper, but should have scored a goal and gotten a comeback goal. But just amazing performance from the team defensively, kept Fulham to not a sniff the entire game, which away from home, it's ridiculous that we've been able to do that to teams like Brentford, like Fulham, who've beaten Manchester City, beaten Liverpool. You know, these teams give every team in the league an insanely hard game, and we're just blowing them away. Just fills me with confidence going into this the run-in of the season, because it feels like there isn't going to be a team that's going to stop us, other than Manchester City maybe, but that might not be enough. I mean, I know City are going to drop points here and there.
Yeah, still 5 points.
Yeah, I know City are going to drop points here and there. We might drop points a couple times too, but the way we're playing right now, the health, like the health of the squad, you know, Jorginho giving that Partey the needed rest that he's needed to come back healthy, because he had that injury spell right where Jorginho was playing for a few weeks. And we've lost Partey in the run-in before in the last couple of years, and it's always ruined our run. And having him now healthy coming in, he was incredible in that first half. And being able to bring him out or use him now in mid-game, Jorginho will probably start in the midweek in Europa again. Being able to have that depth and our midfield be able to keep ticking, these moves that we made in January have just been so key. The Kiwior one, you know, he didn't have a great debut against Sporting, that crazy 2-2 game that we had in Europa League. I don't know if you saw the highlights of that, Alex, but there was like...
I watched a little bit of the second half, and I saw the second goals for both teams.
Oh, it was a frantic game.
It was an entertaining game. Game.
It was end-to-end for 90 minutes. I mean, both of us went at each other, and Sporting could have had 5 or 6 goals. We could have had 5 or 6 goals. I mean, that game literally could have ended, you know, some ridiculous scoreline, but... I think at the Emirates, that's not going to be the case. The confidence that we're going to get, the team coming back, we get Gabriel Jesus more minutes. I mean, the only players who aren't fit right now are Nketiah and Elneny. So, just all around.
You'll take that.
Yeah,
especially with how well Trossard's playing.
Absolutely, Trossard.
In Nketiah's stead.
I mean,
I just want to say, I pointed out when you signed Trossard that you could and have shifted to him playing as like the center forward, basically, and the relationship
he's
between him and Martinelli.
There. Yeah. Oh,
switching
my God.
Between Martinelli cutting inside and going into that central position and Trossard drifting out wide. Their understanding is already like way further along than I anticipated it would be at this point. And I don't know if you would have gotten that with someone like Mudryk. You know, he's a much younger player, doesn't have the experience
Trossard
of the league and
know-how.
Trossard
already has the Premier League players. He goes up against every team in the league, and he knows every player on the opposing team. You know, he's already been in the league a couple of years. He's already been, you know, getting... He was under Graham Potter, who, you know, did so well at Brighton, had the team going. He was the most important player under Potter. So the fact that we were able to get a player of that caliber for as cheap of a price in January in the middle of a title race, like you said, I don't know what the price or like the... He should have been our number one target, or maybe he was. Maybe he was. Who knows? But it's the type of player that he's going to win us the league because of contributions like he's been having. And now Gabriel Jesus can come back in time because he knows there's a player in front of him who's performing well, and he doesn't have to rush back, and we don't have to put him immediately into the lineup and get him re-injured, you know? So just so many positives right now for Arsenal. I just don't see where, and I've been rewatching the All or Nothing from last season, Alex, and the amount of toxicity at the beginning of last season, the Arteta out, the all the training room stuff with Aubameyang and with Lacazette, and just the shifting of the team overall, everything Arteta's done. It was giving me chills just watching some of the speeches, some of the things that the players were saying. You know, players who were complaining that they weren't getting minutes, players like, you know, Sambi Lakanga and Nketiah telling him not to complain, just the overall mentality that was being instilled into the squad, and just like the cutthroat, you know, just butchery of the players who weren't willing to streamline and to be part of the process, quote unquote. It's been amazing to see the fact that Arsenal's documented all of it. There's a lot of rumors that this season's been filmed as well, Alex, like behind the scenes, not an all or nothing type thing, but, you know, from an Arsenal point of view, because the all or nothing, the transparency that we're showing this rise to be able to, if we win this title, it's going to be a blueprint for other teams to do. And I think it's awesome. I hope we do it. I'm starting to believe we're gonna do it. The way we're playing right now, it almost doesn't matter. Like, I think we're good enough this point. What we've shown to win the title this year, like, we deserve it, you know. So I'm hoping that that if we stay healthy, I think if we stay healthy, we're gonna win it.
Yeah, it almost makes you think you would have rather had All or Nothing, like the Amazon documentary, be about this season.
No, I think the All or Nothing, I enjoyed so much just even rewatching it, because you see the struggles of the team, you see the speeches, the things that had to be said, the sacrifices that had to be made from players, the pain that these players had to go through to get to this point. You know, all of it means so much more and matters more at this point, knowing what's happened last season, all the pain and all the struggles and failures. And learning from that and improving, it gave me chills. Like, it was so awesome to watch. So I'm happy that last season was the one that, you know, because like I said, there's rumors that there's a lot of recording going on right now in the background, and we may see that content come out in the near distant future. So hopeful about that.
All right, well, that's enough of the pre-coronation of Arsenal. Let's move down the table a little bit to Liverpool, who, as I mentioned in the introduction, they went to Bournemouth, lost 1-0 in the early kickoff on Saturday.
Billing God!
Philip Billing. Not quite as early as he did the previous week, but scored the opener.
I did tease it, Alex. I did say, you know, the last time that a team, you know, Southampton went and lost 9-0, they went and flipped the result and beat the team that beat them 9-0 2-0. So I did tease it. Bournemouth went and fucking did it.
They certainly did. And this was one of the few games this weekend that I did get to watch, like, along with the Chelsea game, obviously, just after that. But I was watching this with one of my cousins who's a Liverpool fan. He was sweating it out the whole time. Salah missed a penalty in the second half that, honestly, I didn't think should have been given. I didn't think it should have been given as a penalty in the first place. Yeah, like they say in the States, ball don't lie. All of my English cousins were just kind of like, what is ball don't lie? I was like, well, that's what we say in America when a penalty that shouldn't have been given, or free throws in basketball that shouldn't have been given, the guy ends up missing them. It's just like, that's karma, like you said. Ball don't lie. And Bournemouth walk out with the 1-0 win. They really needed that, because teams like Everton won around them. Yeah,
they were good for it. The Cherries were good. Like, I'm surprised. I'm not, like, sold that they're going to be relegated at this point because of this result, because of how they played against Arsenal. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league. They really remind me of Burnley, of the Sean Dyche Burnley that we always would see in the league. They just get into a super low block. They're incredibly hard. I mean, incredibly hard to break down. And they've got some decent players on the counterattack. They've got good hold-up play in players like Solanke. And they're a threat on set pieces. And if they get a few set pieces against you and you can't break them down, they're going to win games like this 1-0. And I just read a stat today, Alex. This is the most points and wins that the bottom three sides have ever had in the Premier League at this point.
Yeah, It's so close down there. Like I said, they kind of needed that win with Everton beating Brentford, which was kind of a surprise result, though Everton can beat anyone at home. But yeah, now Bournemouth are still in the relegation zone in 18th place on 24 points. Just below them are Leeds with 23 in 19th place and Southampton with 22 points in 20th place. And then Bournemouth are, you know, tied with West Ham on points, both on 24, but Bournemouth have a much worse goal difference. And there's one more team on 24 points, and that's Leicester, who now have four straight losses in a row.
I think you're going to need 40 points to be safe this season. I don't think past season's 37, 38. I think you're going to need 40 points to be safe this year.
Yeah, that's traditionally the mark like that teams 41. Set out for.
I could see Bournemouth, Leeds, or Southampton getting up to 40 points and like it being that close. Because these teams are going to keep picking up wins like that. And when they get to desperation mode, you know, Alex, like these relegation teams can go on runs at the end of the season and pick up wins when they need to. We've seen it happen before, so I think it's going to be a crazy run-in for the relegation battle.
But refocusing to Liverpool, last week when we were talking about them, we were more focused, obviously, on this Real Madrid second leg that's coming up tomorrow. We're recording Tuesday morning in the States, Tuesday afternoon here in England. And, you know, we're not really anticipating Liverpool overturning that deficit, that 5-2 deficit that they have from the first leg, with them having to go to the Bernabeu to do so. But do you think that that was like their intention, that they were too focused on that game and
clearly,
this one just tripped them up?
Yeah, he didn't start, you know, the lineup that he'd been starting the last. He rested a few key players and I think brought on Gakpo in the second half.
Brought on Jota and Firmino. He had Gakpo, Nunez, and
okay.
Salah.
Then I guess I don't know.
I think it was the midfield.
The midfield was
the issue.
Yeah, he didn't start Elliot, right?
I think it was Basetic, Elliot, and well, let me just check. Let me not speculate, and let me just confirm it. Give me a second. Yeah, Fabinho, Basetic, and Harvey Elliott started. Elliot got brought off at halftime.
Oh, that's why I didn't see him. Yeah, because I started watching in the
he
second
He got brought
half.
Off at halftime for Jota. So Klopp went with a much more attacking, basically four up top formation, with Gakpo as sort of like the player playing off the front line a little bit more, dropping deeper. And Gakpo looked much more comfortable doing that, and Liverpool looked better as a whole in the second half. But once Salah misses that penalty, you're just thinking, like, that would have been the goal that obviously equalized, and then you'd probably expect them to push on with the confidence and get the winner. But that's just how the season's been going for Liverpool. They get one or two good results, and then all of a sudden they fall apart against a team that you wouldn't expect them to do so at all. And that's what Klopp has to fix. And I think it's going to take maybe not just like signing players next summer, but like having the patience to give players like Bajcetic and Elliot, these young players, Carvalho, the attacking midfielder they signed from Fulham last summer, giving those young players the opportunities to fail like this and you know, bounce back and improve. So they may be in a similar position to Chelsea.
If you look at their bench right now, right, other than so Tsimikas and Matip are fine on the bench. You got, you know, Milner's been there too long. They got to refresh on someone like Milner. Henderson, you know, probably maybe another year or two. He probably deserves to be given another year at the club. Fabio Carvalho is a kid. I mean, I guess, you know, probably not ready for this Liverpool team. I think he needs a loan. Or do you think, you know, what he did on Fulham in the championship was enough and you think he should just be playing at Liverpool right now?
That's basically what I was saying, where I'm not sure what's happened to Carvalho's minutes. It's probably Gakpo who's affected those minutes the most, since they both like to play kind of off the left as either like a hybrid winger slash attacking midfielder. But if Gakpo starts to play more definitively in that front line, then maybe Carvalho can get some minutes. A lot of it's going to depend on what if any European competition they qualify for. If they have Europa League and fail to get into the Champions League,
yeah,
then you can
keep
all those young players
sure,
around
yeah.
and give them the European experience on Thursday nights.
I think Liverpool are going to make some signings, especially, you know, midfield and a little bit more defensive depth. I think that, you know, the Diaz injuries hurt them a lot this season. you know, not having that left wing depth, Jota being out for most of the year, you know, they'll probably have to replace Bobby Firmino. So there's going to be a lot of shifting around at Liverpool. And if, you know, I think the race to top four is going to go to the end. I think they're all going to choke, like always. I think even teams right. like Chelsea could come back into the race later on, you know, near the end. And I'm sure you guys will fall short, but I'm sure there'll be some hope from Chelsea fans thinking that you can do it, because there's going to be more points dropped from Tottenham, who got back on track, looked pretty good. Heung-min Son, you know, getting some nice goal or a nice goal. Harry Kane with a brace. You know, we got a they're Jekyll and Hyde, like we always said, win loss. They look good, look bad. So Newcastle also getting back on track, narrow 2-1 win
against Wolves. Yeah,
that was a decent game.
I'm still confident that Newcastle will be the team.
Yeah, I was about to say,
even
Alex,
after Liverpool's win, so, I'm not
so
deterring.
They
kind of
looked like their old self in that game. I don't really love Saint-Maximin starting on the left wing. I know that he's been like a big player for Newcastle, but it feels like he kind of throws off a little bit of the mojo of the team passing wise because of how much he dribbles.
Think of the dynamic of the team, of Newcastle's team, when Saint-Maximin was at his best. He was at his best when Newcastle as a club were pretty crap, to be honest. Like, they were just getting him the ball, hoping he could progress them up the field, give the other teammates enough time to get themselves up the field, either take someone on and cut the ball back or go for goal himself, or play a ball back to whichever trailing fullback was coming forward, and they would get a cross in to, you know, Chris Wood or whoever.
So
that's not the dynamic anymore. The rest of the team has improved, and they don't need to force feed him the ball anymore. So with the limited opportunities and less reliance on Saint-Maximin, he's not really had the opportunities to shine. And I don't know if that's a bad thing, because look where they are. They weren't anywhere close to this good when he was the best player.
They started Saint-Maximin, Isak, and Murphy up top. You know, Willock and Murphy were switching around, you know, on the wing, and Murphy was dropping into midfield as well. They were just basically playing get the ball to Saint-Maximin, and they scored off a corner. So Maximin had nothing to do with their initial goal that they scored. When Maximin came off and they brought on Almiron and Callum Wilson, the game looked back to their old self. They were passing, zipping the ball around, and shortly after, Wolves got an equalizer, and then Almiron, you know, went and got a crucial winner for them. And, you know, to have that depth off the bench where you could bring a player like Almiron on to change the game, Callum Wilson as well, you know, that's only going to get better for Newcastle. You know, they still have Javier Manquillo and Matt Target is pretty decent, but Paul Dummett and Jamal Lascelles, Elliot Anderson, they can upgrade on these players, and they will. Matt Ritchie as well. They've, you know, players who've been there for a long time, they can get rid of all these players. And suddenly, you know, I think next season we'll see this bench and it'll be chock full of players that are probably starting for Newcastle right now. And they'll have a bunch of new good players in the lineup. So this can only get better for them. And it's signs of games like this where, honestly, like, Wolves were playing well. They looked like they had a decent bit of chances, and it looked like it wasn't going to be Newcastle's day. But Eddie Howe found a way. And, you know, like you said, they're back on track for top four. Let's see how it all goes for them. You know, it's a great season so far for them. I think punching above what everyone thought they were going to do.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that I want Newcastle to get top four. I'm kind of numb to the whole thing now,
because I'm not saying I want them to.
I'm just saying, based off what I've seen from them this season and the progression that every player, it seems, has made there, that I think they will end up doing it with their defensive record.
But they're so green, Alex. You know, they're going to choke. Like, they don't have.
Yeah, they already have. You know, but I'm saying, so now they've teams, got their first full first
so,
team back.
Right, but so many
Isak
teams
is back scoring goals. I was
so
saying
teams
this last
that
week
have been in for top four for consistently for a long period of time. Arsenal have choked positions that have been much better than what Newcastle is in right now.
None of those Arsenal teams have had the defensive record that Newcastle have. And, like, the Newcastle's problem is scoring goals. And if Wilson and Isak stay healthy, I think they'll score plenty of goals. And those aren't even their two best goal scorers. Almiron has been.
It doesn't feel like,
you know,
defensively.
Well.
Nick Pope, he's on some shit right now because he was awful in this Wolves game. He should have been sent off, actually. I think he got very, very lucky. There was a tackle in the first half that he made that I think he should have been sent off for. I think, I don't know why, it wasn't a red card and a penalty, and this game would have changed completely. I think he's on some shit right now, on terrible form. That red card he had a few weeks ago, I think it's affected him. I don't know if he's lost his head a little bit, but losing the cup and maybe not being able to play in it, all of those things. I think Nick Pope is a danger for me right now, and I don't think he's nearly as good as he has been all season. So watch that. Watch that.
Okay. We'll keep an eye out for it. Let's talk about Manchester United. I didn't get to watch this game, and I'm guessing you were busy watching the Arsenal game, but they were held to a 0-0 draw with Southampton. Casemiro was sent off in the game.
I actually watched the second half because we played well in the first half that I switched to the United game because I knew we were just going to breeze by. And then I had the Arsenal game on the second screen.
All right. So what was Manchester United's problem other than obviously Casemiro being sent off in the first half? And he's now going to miss four games because it's his second red card of the season. That seems very significant to Man United.
They had some decent chances still, even going down to 10 men, and still obviously looked like the better team. But Southampton have done this to a lot of teams. You know, they've frustrated even Arsenal. They've been really good in defensive block. Yeah, beat you guys. They're really, really good on set pieces. And with someone like James Ward-Prowse, you know, you're always going to have a chance to get a result. He wasn't a big part of this game, but they have Romeo Lavia, who for me, he's been, you know, since last season, there were flashes of him being, they signed him last year, right?
They signed him at the beginning of this season from Manchester City.
Season. Yeah, I was going to say at the beginning of this season when he was playing, I think he got injured for a while. He looked really good, you know, during that early stretch. Carlos Alcaraz.
Wait, can I just say about Lavia? Lavia looked so good in that early stretch of the season that he had just signed for Manchester City. And I remember it was maybe the third or fourth game of the season. Southampton came back from 1-0 down to beat Chelsea. And Todd Boehly tried to sign him after he had just moved from City to Southampton in that same window last summer. And obviously couldn't pull it off because Southampton didn't want to sell a player they just signed in that window. But that's how good he was early on. And yeah, you're right. He was out injured, and that like kind of coincided with the large parts of their drop in form this season. But he's a very exciting player that probably will get a move next this upcoming summer.
There's some other like exciting young talent. Armel Bella Kochup, the wing back who plays for Germany already.
He's a center back.
Center back. I'm sorry. And Carlos Alcaraz, the Argentine midfielder that they signed, he's looked pretty good. He wasn't amazing in this game, but he's looked good in parts of the season, especially recently. And then I don't even know who that Sulemana guy is. Just started playing for Southampton, but he's looked, you know, like a
productive workhorse. He's the one they just signed from. He just signed from France. He was playing, I believe, for Senegal at the World Cup. And the main thing people were throwing around about him when he signed Ghana, sorry. The main thing people were throwing around about him when Southampton signed him in January was that he was the player who clocked the fastest pace at the World Cup. He was the fastest player at the World Cup, basically.
Yeah, he's.
And they signed him for good money too, like 30 million. That's like a big swing for them.
He buzzes around, and he's definitely a threat on the ball, and he works really, really hard. I noticed that Bednarek back in the lineup as well. So him and Bella Kochup seem like actually really, really strong center back pairing. And
Gavin Bazunu, a beast in goal again.
Beast
love
in goal
to see it
against,
from the Irish lad.
Manchester United was excellent. And the wing backs as well. I mean, this the fact that they're not playing Mohamed Salisu, who I know he's been good in at times, but he was an error machine for Southampton. They're not relying on players like that anymore. And they're still bringing on, players like Adam Armstrong, Sekou Mara, that new Paul Onuachu kid. Makes you think Southampton are going to push to the end. You know, they're good enough.
Yeah, it's hard to call teams like Southampton and Bournemouth and even Everton. You can put Everton in
right
this.
Everton as well. They got another win, right? Like
yeah. But we were chalking them in thinking, oh yeah, those are probably going to be the teams that are relegated. There's chances because it's still close and has been close for months now.
Dwight McNeil.
But now you can't really predict it with any sort of certainty. It's just kind of waiting to see if one significant player picks up an injury.
You know, that we had on the pod a few weeks ago, being like, "Oh, who's going to get relegated?" Because I knew some shit like this was going to happen. Yeah, yeah.
We preceded that by saying, you know, we're fully ready to be wrong. It's still a whole half of the season left when we were talking about that, but we'll see. I think there's like certain players on these teams that, like, if they get injured or get suspended. You know, which is kind of bringing me to a segue to Manchester United. Casemiro is an example of that for Manchester United. Now that he's suspended for four games,
this is going to be a problem for them.
Should United fans be now concerned about what previously seemed like, you know, we could just sort of write them in as the third team to get the top four?
Now no Eriksen. You know, they're going to have to be using Scott McTominay and Fred, which we've heard all the jokes about those two in the past. I don't, you know,
maybe Sabitzer and Fred,
but Sabitzer wasn't, you know, he wasn't even on the bench. I don't know. Is he fit?
I believe so. Again, I didn't watch this game. So, I've seen previous games that he's played, and I'm just saying that Ten Hag has played him in a deeper midfield role, even though he is usually more of a, forward pushing midfielder. So it's not just McTominay and Fred, and that's all they have. They have, you know, at least one other option. But Casemiro has been so huge and such a big influence to the team as a whole on and off the field that without him for four games, you've got to be looking at this four-game stretch and thinking they might be in a bit of trouble.
Eriksen is out till late April or May. And, you know, Casemiro out for four games, I mean, that's going to be all of April, basically, because there's an international break. And that's going to be a huge... You know, for the run-in for Manchester United. Thankfully, I think United have a pretty easy run into the season. I don't think they have too many huge games.
Yeah,
left.
They do. So I'll lean towards them still being okay, but I think they need to start, you know, being a little bit concerned.
Well, their next game is at St. James's Park, but that's, you know,
not until after the international break.
April. So they might get healthy again before they go there. I think they play Chelsea, they play Spurs. They play Chelsea at home, Spurs away.
You know, and one of those games he'll be suspended for will be the FA Cup
games they have left. They have a bunch of pretty easy home games, you know, other than that, and then some pretty quote unquote easy away games as well. So I think other than those games, United have a pretty easy run in, you know, and I think they'll still make top four pretty comfortably. I think they'll be that third team. Rashford's too good, man. Rashford's too good this year.
Okay, well, let's just hit on the way too early predictions or previews for the weekend coming up. Like I just mentioned, there are FA Cup quarterfinals going on this weekend, so some teams will be off of Premier League obligations.
Wait, Alex, what about
Manchester
Chelsea?
City?
We're going to get to them in a week, Alex.
We're going to get to them in a second. I just want to mention these FA Cup games. We got right, like the one that stands out to me is Manchester City Burnley on Saturday at 12:45 Eastern Time in the States. That's Vincent Kompany's Burnley, who are top of the Championship, dominating it, and will be back in the Premier League next season. Vincent Kompany going back to the club that he's so closely affiliated with.
Can you imagine he beats City and then they go and they win the FA Cup?
I mean, the FA Cup's wide open. Manchester United and Man City are, you know, the only two, you know, what you would categorize as big clubs still left in the competition.
I mean, I want City to win because I want them to go as deep as possible into the FA Cup to fuck up their Premier League run.
Sure. But, you know, I'm just talking about, like, it's wide open for another team that isn't one of the traditional, like, top six teams to win it.
Grimsby, Blackburn, Sheffield. It's great. We still got a bunch of non-Premier League teams in the FA Cup. And that's why this is the type of, why I appreciate this cup much more than the League Cup, because it doesn't give teams like this really a chance very much, because they have to play Premier League teams off the bat, and a lot of those teams just get eliminated in the early rounds because they have to play against a bunch of Premier League opposition round after round. But here they can kind of sneak by with playing one or two Premier League teams, and if they win those games, you know, they can get into the quarterfinals like they are now. So it's pretty cool.
And even for a team like Brighton, who are going to be playing Grimsby,
that's awesome.
Brighton playing Grimsby Sunday at 9 a.m. Brighton, I think, got to an FA Cup semi-final maybe 2 years ago under Graham Potter, but for them, they're obviously not winning the league anytime soon. They're high up in the Premier League and having their best season. But an FA Cup, if they manage to pull that off and win that, would be massive for them and their fans. And they're the third favorite, I would probably say, after City and Manchester United.
Did you see De Zerbi, any of the highlights from the Leeds-Brighton game? I mean, De Zerbi's reaction when Harrison scored in the 78th minute because there was a clear open chance that Brighton missed right before the goal, and to make it 3-1 and put the game away. They were up 2-1 at that point. Harrison scores, and De Zerbi freaks out. I mean, I think he definitely believes his team can make top four. If you look at the table right now, and they still have a couple of games in hand, I think they're the only team of the Brentford, you know, that still are in it. And that draw, I mean, they're right there. They win their couple of games in hand because they've got three games in hand on Tottenham right now, right?
So if they win three games in hand on Liverpool, and they're only 3 points behind Liverpool.
Exactly.
I mean, Newcastle have some games in hand as well. They've played 25 games, and Brighton have played 24 games, and Newcastle are 5 points ahead of Brighton. So, again, still leaning that way, but I agree with you. It's still very much in their hands, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're still hanging around there near the end of the season, but I still can't. Results like this, I know Leeds have improved slightly, but they should be winning a game like Leeds away.
Well, they really should have won the game, but if they had, I mean, they'd be on 41 points right now with 24 games played, which would be incredible for Brighton. I mean, I know that they drew the game, but they're on a great run this season. They're playing so well, and I see them, you know, fighting for it also till the end and pushing, making that top four spot just that much harder to get.
All right. Well, who do you think are going to be the four FA Cup semifinalists? I think I'm going to go with Manchester City, Sheffield United, who will play Blackburn Sunday at 7 a.m. Brighton, who play Grimsby Sunday at 9 a.m. And then I'll still go Manchester United, who I think will beat Fulham in that last quarterfinal Sunday at 11:30 a.m. And we'll end up with City, Sheffield, Brighton, and Manchester United. The four home teams, basically, I think will go through to the semifinals of the FA Cup.
I agree with you on all of those, except I think Fulham beats United and goes through to the semifinals.
Will they have Paulinho back?
They will have Paulinho back.
All right, well, that gives them midfield. So, yeah, I don't think that's the craziest prediction. We've seen Man United be knocked out by, Middlesbrough last year.
I think Ten Hag is going to focus on, because they also have Europa League. So I think they're going to, you know, I know that they trounced Sociedad in the first leg. They'll probably be able to play a weaker team in midweek. But I still think that the Premier League, Europa League is their focus here. Maybe they're going to go for more cups, but yeah, I think they're going to have to drop out of a competition or two
No team thinks that way.
I think their squad is starting to run thinner. Yeah, I know they don't, but their squad is starting to run thin, and I think they're going to slip up somewhere, and I think this is going to be the one.
All right, well, yeah, that's a bold enough prediction. I'm just happy to see even a team like Grimsby, who I think are in the third tier right now, the League One. And there hasn't been a League One team reach this round of the FA Cup since I think 40
Brighton
years ago.
Crush them. I feel bad.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah, would have been more exciting if that had been up in Grimsby instead. Grimsby hosting that one, but they have to go down to Brighton, and obviously we just mentioned Brighton are on a stormer this season. I wanted to talk about Chelsea, but we don't have time. We can save it for next week.
Chelsea are
going to be hosting
back,
Everton.
Alex.
And
Kai Havertz is angry.
Javier, no. I don't want to talk about the actual performance. We'll do that next week. I just want to say there's a small chance that I might be at the Chelsea-Everton game on Saturday.
That
you can watch the space and the...
That would be excellent, Alex.
But it would be just my luck to go to the Chelsea-Everton game, my first time at Stamford Bridge in 20 years for a match, and we get, 1-0 Sean Dyche Brexit screwed up like you guys did when you went to Goodison.
Nah, Alex, you're on great form. Three wins in a week.
I think we should
Potter
win.
Is a god. All the Potter out people are quieted.
Right. We're starting to develop an identity again, shifting back to the back three. It's a lot of the same kind of analysis that we had about the win last week. When Chelsea beat
Enzo
Dortmund
Fernandez
and Leeds
is
before
class,
that.
Man.
He is so class.
He is such a good player.
I told
player.
You, Danny. I told you all.
Him and Mateo Kovacic together in midfield. I mean, it makes Chelsea look completely different when you get a world-class player next to him like Mateo Kovacic. You know, I know that, Gallagher's has been great, and I don't think Gallagher will thrive that well in a two-man midfield. I think he needs that third midfielder to be the third midfielder to be able to have that roaming presence to be able to get runs into the box. Kovacic and Enzo, their ball control, the way they can play off each other, you know, that's there for Chelsea in the future. You know, you add to that midfield, you know, a little bit more depth. Obviously, Jorginho's not there anymore to be the backup. You need someone who's on their level, slightly maybe below it, but pushing them to try to get into the team.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be N'Golo Kanté. I think N'Golo is going to be the type of player where for Chelsea, if he signs a new contract, he'll just be a depth player where coming in off the bench, he'll secure games for you guys. He'll, you know, you can switch to a four at the back and put him in midfield to get more defensive. I don't know. But, it you know, Chilwell obviously as well. And I don't, Reece James wasn't back in this game again, but
Chilwell, they rested him because he played the Champions League game. But they want to save him for the bigger games, I think.
Back on form. I mean, you just need him to stay healthy because I feel like every time he gets flying, he gets hurt again. So prayers for Chilwell staying healthy, for James staying healthy. Because when you have those players, when you have those players back in your team, it looks like Chelsea are back to your old self. You know, so
I just want to end on this, Javier. Enzo Fernandez has two assists since he's come to Chelsea. The Joao Felix goal at West Ham and this Kai Havertz goal in the Leicester game. Jorginho's total Premier League assists for Chelsea, 5 assists. So Enzo's 3 assists away from tying Jorginho's career tally in the Premier League for Chelsea.
Yeah, Trossard already equaled Alex.
Yeah.
He has 5 already this season.
Again, Trossard's a very different player. I'm comparing two players that one left Chelsea. And, you know, I'm not shitting on Jorginho. I'm just saying in terms of the statistics and the goals he was directly creating. Right. That's not
what
anyone
needs him for. Thomas Partey doesn't really get many assists either. You know?
Right. It's not their job. But Enzo does all of that job that Jorginho does or used to do for Chelsea. And he adds it helps us create more of a cutting edge going forward, which we desperately needed.
Yeah, he's
so,
an incredible player, man.
Excited to see how much better he gets.
He was both of us were hyping him before the World Cup, and he performed.
No. I was hyping him before the World Cup. You do not take that away from me.
Ah, all right. Alex
was saying Chelsea were going to sign him.
Right. That was my boy, Danny. What a prediction, Alex. What a prediction. What a World Cup he had, and then signing him. Now he's in the Chelsea team. I mean, you must be over the moon about that. That's why I can't imagine. Like, how could have Chelsea players wanted Potter out? I mean, he bought you guys. You guys got Enzo Fernandez under Potter. Give him some time to thrive. I mean, you guys, he's going to be one of the best midfielders or the best midfielder in the league next season. So just hold your horses, Dannies.
Can't wait. All right. Let's leave it there. One more game I want to mention coming up this weekend in the Premier League that you guys should keep an eye out for is during the 10 a.m. time slot, Southampton hosting Tottenham. With these results Southampton have gotten recently and Tottenham's up and down form, I think we could be in for, you know, a bit of a surprise there. So keep an eye on that one. Javier, thanks for jumping on, you know, early morning with you all in the States. I appreciate it. And if you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can follow him at JavierRev9. Please tweet at him to try and get him to, you know, respond and be more active on Twitter, because no matter how much I bug him and say, hey, man, you need to, like, start putting these texts that you send me, put those on Twitter.
Back.
Yeah, he tweets back. So, yeah, but that's how we'll get him hooked, Danny. Danny's, I guess, plural. Follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the footy this weekend. And until next time, see you.